a recreation strategy in response to the community's growing demand for access of different, more access and different types of access. We identified ways to safely meet that growing demand and identified facility improvements needed for the next 15 years. And this has been endorsed by our partners, not only within the city, but by the Marine Board, by the National Marine Fisheries Service, and is currently being used by the Natural Resources Damage Assessment Trustees for informing their plans for Portland Harbor. We also spent a lot of time on the West Hayden Island process, where we helped implement the ordinance that we assisted in drafting in 2011. We provided specialized technical assistance, and Heidi will talk about that more in a moment, and identified options for long-term management of the natural areas on West Hayden Island. We worked closely with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability on creating the goals for the Central City 2035 process, and there's a couple of blockbuster goals that have to do with the Willamette River and urban design that we think are really going to be useful and produce an exciting result in the Central City in the next 20 years. Similarly, we're making sure that the rivers figure prominently and rationally in our comprehensive plan update. We're also working to keep people safe on the river, and Kevin can talk a little bit about that.
Thanks, Rick. I sit on a river safety panel that's coordinated with all these groups you see listed here, including the United States Coast Guard, Multnomah County River Sheriff's Office, Portland Fire and Rescue, and the Port of Portland Fire and Rescue Team. These groups provide search and rescue on the rivers. We have the busiest waterways in the state, and we often run into issues where people get into trouble, their boats are sinking or abandoned, or we have unfortunate tragedies where people either fall or jump off of bridges and require rescue or search and rescue. So we help to coordinate with these groups for events. Could you go to the next section? Yeah, derelict vessels, emergency communications, event safety, and emergency response communications. In particular, we helped broker a deal, an agreement with the Coast Guard and Multnomah County Sheriff's Office so that they could share radio packs so that when they respond to an event on the river, they can communicate and coordinate the response to that event.
Thanks, Kevin. In addition to these programmatic opportunities to advance the river goals, we work daily on a routine basis, project by project, in reviewing proposals, whether it be the University of Portland's master plan and their waterfront expansion, the ZRZ master plan, how the Selwood Bridge is touching down on either riverbank, working to clarify and assist the South Waterfront Greenway construction, and creating more of a waterfront presence in Firehouse 21 reconstruction. These are all things that we invest in on a day-to-day basis and have the opportunity, again, to work with Portland Parks and Rec, Portland Fire and Rescue, Planning and Sustainability, Environmental Services, BDS, PBOD, and PDC. We also take note of the fact that there are at least 600,000 people that live upstream of the 500,000 people that live in Portland, and we make an active objective to reach out to the Willamette River cities upstream from us so that we can learn from each other and better understand how we can all contribute to improved health of the river. We've expanded our Columbia River portfolio. We've convened people around the Columbia River Treaty Review Process, answers on the Columbia Corridor Association's Board of Directors. We've initiated work with Columbia River Keeper, and have had the opportunity to raise the profile of how urban communities and urban river settings can contribute to overall health of river systems as big as ours through Maya Memorial Trust Willamette River Initiative and the Within Our Reach Conference, and by bringing the River Rally to Portland in 2012, where 700 river advocates from the River Network and the Waterkeeper Alliance visited the city to learn what we were doing in May of last year. And again, we have the privilege and pleasure of working with a host of community groups and other cities up and down the river. I'm going to hand it over to Ann now for a summary of our Superfund activities.
Certainly. Thank you, Rick. Superfund will require big investments in the city of Portland for the cleanup of the Portland Harbor. contaminated sediments from legacy pollutants. The city has a unique role in being both a potentially responsible party, but also as a steward. So making sure that you as city decision makers and our public have the best possible information as we start moving to the next phase of the Superfund cleanup. Much of the technical work in the study has been done. We're now at the point where EPA has that information, and we expect them to come out with a proposed cleanup plan in a couple years. I'm not going to tell you when because it keeps changing, but you will be making decisions about this during your term. We've tried to come up with tools that will help you with that decision making. We funded a study that looked at the short-term economic impacts of the investment in Superfund cleanup. That will be in the millions of dollars. How do we capture that investment in our regional economy? And that's a question that we need to tease out in the next several years. We've worked to provide tools to assess the ecological values of restoration projects so that we as a city can prioritize our projects to get the highest value possible from those choices. We play an active role in connecting with the community advisory group. They're the group delegated by EPA to provide public comment on the cleanup process. We think it's really important to have our eyes and ears on that process to make sure we hear what our citizens' concerns are, but also how the regulatory agencies are responding to those concerns. So we'll continue those efforts in the upcoming years. We also try to make sure that the public has access to information about the project in a way that's accessible. It's highly technical. It's highly complex. It's confusing as heck. So making information available so that people can have access to that. Thank you.
And now Heidi is going to start us off on our third mission area, namely the protection and restoration of ecological, recreational, and economic values, starting with ecological values.
Thanks, Rick. An important role of the Rivers Office is to help the city develop the tools and understanding to quantify and assess our urban river ecosystem. So we did this by providing technical expertise and policy recommendations on environmental river-related issues in 2012, focused primarily on ecosystem evaluation methods and regulations. And because Superfund plays such a significant role in this stretch of the Willamette, the office analyzed the methodology used by the Natural Resource Trustee Council to assess damages to natural resources in the Portland Harbor. Their method is called the Habitat Equivalency Analysis, and we assessed and utilized this method to quantify and prioritize the viability of potential city projects that provide restored habitat meeting Superfund and watershed health requirements. We used this knowledge in working with BES to respond to the draft programmatic EIS and restoration plan released in the summer of 2012, focusing our comments on clarifying that assessment methodology. Without this information, the city cannot accurately assess project compliance with natural resource damage liability. The Rivers Office also worked on the development of the city's habitat restoration evaluation method for riverine and riparian areas. This involved field testing with other methods, and we did this in partnership with River Network, Willamette Riverkeeper, and the Willamette Partnership. The Rivers Office also worked closely with BPS and BES to develop a forest mitigation framework in conjunction with the proposed development and annexation of West Hayden Island in order to account for the functions and values in the island's floodplain forest. The Rivers Office also works with the broader regulatory and scientific community and was asked to participate in the creation of an EPA-sponsored stream and river assessment. By participating in this ongoing process, the Rivers Office is making sure that those characteristics specific to large river systems in an urban area are accounted for in the mitigation framework. And this is the framework that will be used for projects in the city that require state and federal permitting. Additionally, the Department of State Lands asked the Rivers Office to contribute to a rulemaking process to determine regulations around the use of state lands during remediation and restoration, while also protecting public trust values. And for those of you, you probably know that the state owns the bed and banks of the Willamette River, so this is significant. And our input resulted in significantly lower future costs for the city when obtaining conservation easements related to natural resource damage projects. Thank you.
Thanks, Heidi. In terms of recreational values, in addition to working internally, we work externally with the community on pretty exciting things. We're working with the Human Access Project, a new Portland nonprofit, to look at the opportunities that might be afforded all Portlanders to swim in the river, including downtown, maybe community boating, to see what we can do to perhaps up the profile of the opportunity for all of us to get on the river and learn how to boat. We're doing this with the advice of the newly formed Citizen Community Advisory Group. In terms of our charge to look toward economic values, given the source of our funds, we can't embark on that directly, but we do know that from our other work in our ecological and recreational parts of our portfolio, multiple benefits proceed, and they generate economic values, whether it's the ability to better showcase Portland Portland Harbor and our information materials, or calling for a better understanding of the economic impacts of the river recreation in the city of Portland, or the opportunity for more green jobs to result through the restoration project. Our fourth category, connecting Portland to the river, is
pretty active in it, and we do hands-on restoration projects and cleanups. We share a lot of information through our River News Digest on our website, and we convene people in celebration, especially through the big float in 2012, and by taking the river, if you will, to community fairs where we can talk to people who wouldn't otherwise have the opportunity to come downtown or to City Hall to express their interests or concerns about the river. So in the year ahead, we plan on continuing to advance the city's river goals through improved internal and external integration. In Superfund, we plan on coordinating citizen engagement and facilitate better decision-making. We'll implement the river recreation strategy, provide specialized technical assistance and expertise to ecosystem service assessments citywide, and we'll continue engaging Portlanders on river issues, not only by gathering around the river goals, but around the ideas that rivers are actually foundationally important to the city, that they can represent a critical infrastructure. After all, again, the Columbia and the Willamette were Portland's original infrastructure for food provision a couple hundred years ago, or even today as we see the tribes gather at Willamette Falls for the lamprey harvest, where they serve as a transportation infrastructure for Native Americans, Lewis and Clark, explorers, trappers, during the ages of steam and sail, or today, where they're an infrastructure that we need to rebuild for habitat, where we can take this example of a map from the Natural Resources Damage Assessment Trustees, who are beginning to identify places that need to be improved to accommodate, better accommodate and help our endangered and native species through projects that may be like Gunderson's Eco Roof or the ecological restoration of the mouth of Stevens Creek, or the reestablishment of a naturalized riverbank in downtown Portland. Rivers are important for our health and well-being. They're an infrastructure for renewal. This is a postcard that my grandfather's uncle sent him in 1903 from the Oaks Park, where people swam and boated. And today, thanks to Portlanders' continuing investment in the river, we have the Portland Triathlon, we have the Big Float, where more and more people are getting to, along and onto our rivers. Rivers that can serve not only as a source of renewal, but as a new form of economic improvement through the development of more abundant forms of appreciation for the rivers as perhaps our prized, among our most prized municipal assets. So that's what we're about, and that concludes the presentation. Anne?
Thank you. So as you see, we're a small program. We work with all the other city bureaus to leverage the resources we have to focus on those river goals that have been adopted by the council and embraced by our Portlanders and try to make our rivers accessible to all, making good decisions, making cost-effective decisions by pooling our resources to really take advantage of the river system that we have. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Questions from council for the panel from the office? Great. Thank you very much. I'm not sure if there's anyone else here to testify on this item.
We have one person signed up.
Yes. Okay, good.
Lightning?
So make way, and we'll let somebody come up. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, council members, mayor.
What's your name for the record?
I'm Stephen Entwistle. Okay, Portland, Oregon, born and raised. And I'm just a little bit concerned that these are all great projects. The restoration of the river. In fact, I like the fact that you're going to include Oaks Bottom. Okay, which is I see a lot of metal hanging on trees, and when they in 1880 when they brought in the railroad, they filled it all in. And then they kind of use it as a garbage dump. There's metal and there's just garbage and there's junk all over the place. But there's a whole section of city population that is not being involved here, and that is the poor, the unemployed, the people that wouldn't normally be hired by private contractors, and the homeless. With the parks, there would be a really good idea to maybe have a quiet place other than a business on Cove for them to sleep, even temporarily, just a one night. Early morning, just a place for somebody that they can sleep. The other thing is we're so focused on efficiency that we have, like I said, we've neglected the fact that there's a lot of people, even homeless people, that are still healthy enough that they are able to work. I would suggest, for the restoration of Oaks Bottom, for example, to restore the salmon habitat, which used to go through the Oaks Bottom, to make that a real green job. And what I mean by green job is no power tools, no gas motors, none of that. Shovels, get as many people, many hands and many people to work that can possibly work on these projects. Because otherwise they're going to be left out, and they are desperate and they need money more than any other private contractors out there today. So I just want to bring that up, that it'd be a great pilot project to start, to see how many shovels we can put in the hands of people, and not necessarily having the government pay for it, but having the private sector invest in the city itself and in the people. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks. Good morning.
Hi, my name is Anthony Woolwell. As an official for hopefully protecting our city, same to you, Commissioner Novick, and some of the great stewards on the council of everything that we need for this city. I am concerned about this plan, and I don't see elements of global warming incorporated into the planning. You can do great projects and put a lot of citizen effort, cooperation, corporate effort, and it will be upended by some of the things that weren't anticipated because of the global warming conditions. For example, the loss of salmon because of the change of temperature in our streams. And we really have to carefully look at that, because the acceleration of global warming is such a consideration, and the damages that are being done are so overwhelming that this kind of planning has to somehow balance some of the realities against what we're trying to achieve. And I think every effort to increase the species' ability to survive, we've lost so many species, is a good effort. But on the other hand, people are not able to have access to drinking water. Bull Run is part of this entire system, and it's a system that's being taken over by corporate interests in my thinking, and I've testified before council several times on this. So the ethics, the practice, of those corporations that are hired to cooperate on this project, I would ask that you carefully examine their track record. Also, the transparency. There's been very little transparency. Our city, just by the Public Interest Research Group, said we are 25th of 30 cities in having transparent financial spending by the city. Boston and New York were in the lead in transparency. These are very complex operations. What is Portland's excuse for the public being so frustrated and in getting information on how their money is being spent? I think that Commissioner Fritz has been very active on this. Several of the people here have. And I think it needs more very intensive care, because people are really strapped financially and are out of work, out of homes, out of water, and it's not a good situation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning. My name is Lightning. I'd like to just bring up a few issues along the river that possibly the Office of Healthy Working Rivers can look into. One is the issue of some of the old log pilings that you have, say, up around Marine Drive that are close to the bank, that even around Kelly Point Park, various boats have hit their hull, hit their outdrives, done a lot of damage to their boats. And what I think would be an interesting study to do is maybe to have some of the contractors out there. We can get some underwater divers. They can assess the situation on going underneath and cutting the log pilings and removing them completely, and or maybe have like a diversified marine come out with their pile drivers and possibly just pull them directly out of the river. The reason why that's really beneficial is to improve the recreational boaters' ability to go close into the banks around, say, Kelly Point Park in various other locations. And it'll save a tremendous amount of money on the expenses to the boaters as far as on maintenance on their outboards, props, outdrives, hulls, and various maintenance that they might incur because of these log pilings that have been remained for many, many years that aren't being used for anything, but they're underwater. And a lot of people can't visually see them, and creates a tremendous amount of damage. Another issue I have is referring maybe to Marine Drive is on the dredging issue to the marinas. Now, what you predominantly have is you have a few yacht clubs there, such as Rose City Yacht Club, that has their own dredge. They have their own pond alongside their parking lot. But what you also have is a few marinas there that are privately owned that, due to the way these marinas are operated, they don't have enough capital to cover that expense for dredging. Very spendy. And as you know, with the climate change, with various factors that can come into play here, you can dredge 1 year, and in 3 years it can fill back in with more silt. So what I may be proposing is to look at a way that we could maybe coordinate a dredging schedule for all these marinas so they could have enough water during, say, the historically low time would be from July 15th to September 15th to allow the recreational boaters to boat year-round without any problems. And I think that would provide a tremendous amount more income, not only to the marinas, but throughout for people buying boats and knowing they can use them year-round. Now, my only other point is on the I-5 bridge. I think that this bridge is going to be an important statement on what we can do to bring Vancouver to Portland and the water underneath. On we need to make a statement with that bridge that says, hey, this is something that is spectacular, something you want to be around, something you want to have water taxis going underneath. Side wheelers or stern wheelers, and various other recreational vessels, and it's a point that we need to take more time in the architectural design of it to make a statement that is going to bring this river as a playground, say up around Marine Drive from Vancouver to Portland, and really utilize this river the way it should be. Let me see.
You're out of time, so that's a great place to stop if you're willing. That's a good point.
If I might ask, Mayor, I didn't know I was on a time frame.
You
were,
but you did well.
Okay, this is not a communication. I signed up to speak after them. but I'm on a 3-minute time frame, sir.
You are, but you have it a little extra, so go ahead.
Okay, that's fair enough.
I see you've been given another minute by some magic cosmic force.
Okay, I don't know what that force is, but that sounds good.
Her name's Carla. But
okay, thank you. Anyway, one other issue, too, is just on a couple environmental issues. I'd like to see a little bit more inspections done on the flotation under current floating homes and or boathouses along the river. I want to make sure that the flotation is adequately encapsulated. If they're not up to date, they can have a flotation specialist make sure that's done, because what we have up and down the rivers, you have a lot of small just foam flotation that animals digest. It's not good for the environment. We need to make sure everything is properly encapsulated. Another issue I have is just on the floating homes. I'd like to see more inspections as far as on the sewer systems. We have a lot of swells on the river due to mainly wind and or the commercial vessels. And it's really hard to inspect those on a regular basis without actually having divers go underneath and make sure your lines are properly hooked up. And I think this is a very important thing to really make sure that these inspections are done on a regular basis and we are not putting sewage into the rivers that we don't have to be by doing proper inspections. Thank you.
Great. Thanks very much. Anyone else to testify on this item?
I move acceptance of the report.
Second.
Any further discussion? Then roll call on the acceptance of the report.
Fritz. Well, thank you, colleagues, and those at home watching, and especially the Office of Healthy Working Rivers staff for this presentation. I am very proud of the Office of Healthy Working Rivers, and we named it with that rather long name because it is intended to address both the health and the working aspects of the mighty Willamette and the mighty Columbia. So most of our work has focused on the Willamette, but as was mentioned in the report, we are moving to the Columbia. And also, I thank the folks who testified just now, the three folks who came to talk. Lightning, if you have, we can give you some more information on pilings and those issues that you mentioned, because the Rivers Office has been looking into those things. But it illustrates Portlanders care about their rivers, and we have succeeded in turning the ship of state into looking at the rivers as our front yard instead of our backyard. And we're going to hear in our next presentation about the combined sewer overflow, which investment the Rivers Office helps coordinate, helps make the commission form of government work better, and make sure that all of those different projects that you shore up and down the river have somebody who is looking at all of them rather than focusing just on one. So thank you very much for this report. Aye.
Fish.
I want to thank Director Byers and her team for the report, Commissioner Fritz for her leadership, and on behalf of the Parks Bureau, we greatly value the collaborative relationship that we have both with the Office of Healthy Working Rivers and with the Bureau of Environmental Services. So thank you. Aye.
Saltzman?
Very good report. Aye.
Novick?
Just following up on the Mayor's comments about the caricature of government compared to the reality, I was really struck by the observation that the Willamette, the state of which Tom McCall decried 40 years ago, is now rated by the DEQ as having, you know, good to excellent water quality. And when you combine that with the report we heard from the Parks Bureau with what we saw happen at the Selwood Bridge last week, we can see what government can do. I mean, government can clean up rivers. Government can, with a small amount of money, provide places for thousands of children to play. And government can move giant bridges without a hitch, as the Oregonian said. So I hope that people are taking note of these facts, and I vote aye.
Hales.
I was out there last summer for both the big float and the D-Rock event, and just saw the passionate interest by a lot of citizens in this radical new idea that the river's clean enough to swim in and that people want to do that, in fact, in very large numbers. So it was pretty dramatic proof of both the change that Commissioner Novish just mentioned and the strong belief that these rivers ought to be healthy and places of recreation as well. So it was a great illustration for me, literally, to get immersed in that issue with about 1,500 of our closest friends. Thank you for a good report. Aye. Okay, next item, please.
Item 85, accept report regarding city fulfillment of the amended stipulation and final order for combined sewer overflows.
Thank you. Well, as we've heard a lot about today about the Bureau of Environmental Services Combined Sewer Overflow Project, one of the conditions of completing that project is to actually provide a final report to show our fulfillment of the amended, stipulated, and final order, which is a long name for the legal agreement we entered into with the state and the EPA to clean up the Willamette River and the Columbia Slough. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Dean Marriott, who is joined with us by DEQ Assistant Director Joni Hammond. Sorry.
Thank you, Mayor Hales and members of the Council. I am Dean Marriott, Environmental Services Director, and as the Commissioner said, Joni Hammond is here from DEQ, and also Tony Barber is here from EPA, both significant players in this chapter of Portland's history, and I invited them to come up. We're going to try to make up a little bit of your time because I know you're behind schedule, so I asked them to come up, and I'm going to do a very short slideshow, and then we'll go right to their comments. You may ask, I thought we were finished. Why are you coming back to talk about this? A little known part of the order was that we had a one-year compliance period, excuse me, during which we had to carefully monitor the performance of the CSO abatement system, collection and treatment system, and report to the state. And if they were satisfied with the report, they would deem that the amended stipulated order had been satisfied. And that's what's happening today. Just a quick note, of course, you've interestingly heard the history of the Willamette just prior to this report. So, and you all know how the history is not a pretty picture. The more recent history, however, as Commissioner Novick just pointed out and reminded us, is much brighter and much much better news. I want to just take a moment to thank two former colleagues of yours, Commissioner Lindbergh and Commissioner Cafori, who back in 1993 negotiated with the State Environmental Quality Commission the amended order, which is what set the stage for the amended stipulation order in 1994, which is the roadmap that we operated on ever since then. And interestingly, I arrived here in Portland as Director of Environmental Services the week that the Environmental Quality Commission voted on the amended order. So I basically arrived, found where my desk was, and was handed the amended order and told to go implement it. So just a reflection here on the milestones. In 2000, our goal was to clean up the Columbia Slough, and we did it. In 2001, we were directed to make some improvements in the main stem of the Willamette, and we controlled 7 outfalls. In 2006, the objective was to control the CSO outfalls on the west side of the river, and we did that. And then by 2011, we were supposed to be finished with all major construction. We met all of those intermediate timeframes. And so the goal was to be finished by December of 2011, and we were. And as I mentioned, we had the one-year compliance check. We submitted our report. So like any good project, you plan, you implement, you check how you're doing, and then you adjust based on how you're doing. So that's the period we're in right now. We've completed our first year of operation. We're now in the period of analyzing the results and do we need to make any tweaks or adjustments to our performance. And for those of you interested in an alternative way of commuting under the river, you can. That's this photograph here. Again, just before we started, we had about 100 days a year when we were dumping raw sewage into the Willamette and the Columbia Slough. So our first year of operation, we were really thrown a tough test. Normally, we get 37 inches of rain. In the past year, we had 53 inches of rain. So somehow the weather gods decided they were going to really put us through our paces. So under the order, we would have been allowed to discharge CSOs on 7 different occasions. That's how intense. The test is the duration of the rain and the intensity of the rain. So using the calculations, we could have discharged on 7 different occasions. We only had to do it on 4. So we actually did better than what we were required to do, which is good news. People have asked me, well, why did you have to do it on 4 occasions? That's the way we always planned it, that if it rained hard enough, long enough, that it overwhelmed our system, then we would be allowed to make a discharge. They were minor, And so now when we have one, we actually go out to the media and announce we have one, and people are quite sensitized to that. The good news is that 95 to 100% of the time, there's not going to be sewage in the river. So that's the good news. So the challenge and lessons are that keep going how we're doing it. Manage stormwater as close to where it hits your rooftop or your parking lot or your street as you can, because it's all about stormwater. What causes a CSO event is too much stormwater getting into the collection system. So all of the investments we've made in green streets, green roofs, green parking lots, they're all paying off. And we obviously have to keep that going. The other part of the equation is we have an old collection system. We had sewers in Portland 100 years ago, way before we had sewage treatment. A lot of those sewers are now have passed their useful engineering life. So we have to continue to focus on making sure the collection system is maintained and works. Otherwise, we'll be leaking sewage from other places that we don't want. And so what does the future hold? Well, I think you got a little bit of the story just a few minutes ago with a report from the Office of Healthy Working Rivers. This changes the relationship of the city and its river. I think for the first time, you're hearing people ask questions about how can we get more access? How can we use it recreationally? What does it mean for economic development now to have a clean river in the heart of Portland? These are questions we never had to confront before. They're with us now, and so as we embark on adopting a changed comprehensive plan and so forth, I think it's good to keep in mind that we now have an asset flowing through the center of Portland. Also, we now regularly sample water quality in the Willamette, and we post the results on our website. So if people are thinking about using the river recreationally, they can go to our website and get the up-to-the-minute water quality results. So we're proud to do that and happy to provide that service. I want to just take a minute to thank Commissioner Saltzman, who has been the commissioner in charge of BES for half of the 20 years that we embarked on this program, and I really appreciate your leadership and guidance. It's been very, very helpful and instrumental in helping us get to the finish line successfully. So my thanks in that. Also, you have the world's best people working for you in the city of Portland. I mean, I am so blessed to have had a great team of people who to work with and help, and not just in environmental services, although I'm particularly proud of them, but this was a collaborative effort across the city with folks in parks and transportation and Office of Management and Finance and you name it. It was a concerted effort to make this work, and it's going to take that cooperation going into the future to keep our river clean. And just as a final thought, I noticed that my friend Paul Gribben, former colleague, just arrived here to help with the recognition and celebration. Paul no longer works for the city, but he was instrumental in getting the West Side Tunnel and the East Side Tunnel built on time and on budget. So I want to thank him for his efforts. And with that, I'll turn it over to Joni.
My fault for starting that.
Mayor Hales, commissioners, and Director Marriott. Good morning. I'm Joni Hammond, DEQ's Deputy Director. I'm pleased to be here, and I want to thank you, your staff, and the citizens of Portland for spending the $1.4 billion to protect the Columbia Slough and Willamette River from the combined sewer overflows. I appreciate the partnership of DEQ and the city. 20 years of hard work on your part. It's been difficult and challenging at times, but most parties always recognize the importance of eliminating the CSOs, which is a tremendous improvement in water quality and public health. Thank you and congratulations.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, my name is Anthony Barber. I'm Director of the EPA's Oregon Operations Office. I'm here representing EPA to simply recognize and thank the City of Portland for the tremendous investment that you've made in this important infrastructure. And further, to recognize the symbol that this work has meant toward the dedication and commitment of the city toward a sustainable future. So thank you.
And with that, I'm going to send that order to archives because we're done.
Wow.
Well, thank you very much.
Further questions for this panel? Thank you very much. And is there anyone signed up to testify on this item?
No one else signed up.
And I believe we can adopt the report. Is that what we're
doing?
Second.
Roll call on the adoption of the report, please. Acceptance of the report.
Fritz?
Well, thank you, Dean Marriott, for your leadership of this. It's almost like you were handed this as a newborn infant, and now the child is off to college. So congratulations on a job well done.
Thank you.
And now you've handed us this resource that is usable, and not only for fish and wildlife, but for people and for industry. So I think your partnership with me, with the Office of Healthy Working Rivers, with Commissioner Saltzman, has been hugely instrumental in getting this done. So congratulations, and thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, for your steadfast leadership and your partnership. This is a wonderful day for the citizens of Portland, the ratepayers of Portland, and a considerable investment which we need to make sure that we continue to foster the values that we that have been evidenced through this program. Aye.
Fish.
So there's two takeaways for me today. One is that thanks are in order to the commissioner in charge, the director, and the whole team for bringing Big Pipe in on time and under budget. But the second is that we don't want to have to spend another $1.4 billion to build a pipe. And my second lesson is we still have to spend the time to educate people that investments in our green infrastructure long-term will produce savings to the public, and that they are not sort of in the category of nice to have. They are essential to have if we are to someday so that we can avoid in the future having to make an investment like this in things like pipes and other tools to address runoff. And the city has got a leadership position in the green infrastructure with programs like Greater Green and a whole host of other things. They are often misrepresented in the media, and perhaps they are not as well understood as they could be in the general public. But that is where the future is if we're to continue to provide leadership and be in a leadership position in dealing with runoff. So thanks again to the team that brought this home, and I'm pleased to be on a council that has prioritized funding for green infrastructure so that in the future we don't have to build another pipe. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank Ms. Hammond and Mr. Barber for being here today. Also want to thank all the employees of the Bureau of Environmental Services and the many contractors who helped bring the Big Pipe project in on time and under budget, and particularly recognize Paul Gribben, who is in the room, who lived and breathed the Big Pipe for many, many years, and Mike Houck, who's also here, who really has always champion the remarks that Commissioner Fish just made about the importance of green infrastructure. So, and Mike's been doing that for a long, long time. It's become the religion here in Portland. So I thank everybody and great job. Aye.
Novick?
I also would like to thank Commissioner Saltzman and Dean and his staff for their years of heroic effort on this project. Thank you very much. And it is very nice to see Ms. Hammond and Mr. Barber here, reflecting the fact that this has been a multi-governmental partnership. So really appreciate your taking the time to come here. And, of course, it's always nice to have a comic book superhero like Mike Houck, urban naturalist, in the room. One other comment I have to make is that it's really disappointed me that none of the bands in Portland's rock scene has taken the name Combined Sewer Overflow, which I think is just a fine name waiting to be used. But having said that, I'm pleased to vote aye.
It might happen now.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, Dean, great work. Again, look at this accomplishment in terms of both complying in a responsible way in a cooperative environment with an environmental mandate, at amazing project management that succeeded in bringing in a very complex project safely and economically. So I think it is worth celebrating. Had this ironic sense as you came up here today. It seemed like there were some meetings in this chambers maybe 15 years ago with some of the same players with different hair color.
Both of us, I think.
Yeah, two of us color. In particular. Yeah. But it's great to be here for this moment as you send this to the archives and check the box of job well done. Thank you. Aye.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we are to the regular agenda. And we have a few items there.
Item 90, amend a contract with Central City Concern to increase compensation by $217,467 to support the CHEERS roving response van.
We have a presentation on this item? Apparently not. Council questions? Anyone here to testify? And then that moves to second.
That's an emergency.
Oh, it's an emergency. Sorry, missed the asterisk. Roll call, please.
I'm very pleased to take this final necessary step to make sure that the CHEERS van is running for the remainder of the year. It was one-time funded, so it's going to be a challenge to look at how it's going to be staffed and funded next year, but it provides an essential service that means our police officers are not transporting people who are incapacitated due to drugs and alcohol to the treatment centers. So I appreciate the partnership with Central City Concern. Aye.
Fish.
This is another example of where the city and the county work together to fund a shared priority. And while this honors a commitment we made in the last budget to fund this, I think this is also Mayor Hale's ripe for the conversation we're having, the big conversation about who does what and how we fund shared priorities going forward. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Approved. Number 91, please.
Amend a contract with Central City Concern for the provision of treatment readiness services, transitional housing, and follow-up retention support services to chemically dependent homeless adult chronic arrestees.
Good morning, Austin.
Good morning, Council. Mayor and Council, my name is Austin Raglione. I am the Service Coordination Team Program Manager for the Police Bureau. Actually, Tess can explain the reason why we're doing this contract the way we did it, so I'm not going to speak on behalf of the last administration. I will let her do that. But I'm here to answer any program questions that you might have.
We're just here to answer any questions, and I think at this point everybody understands the background of how this was not fully funded, and then we allocated money in the fall bump, and now we're just aligning the contracts with that council decision that was made last fall.
Perhaps the one thing that is not as well known, Austin, is that when we built Bud Clark Commons, we moved TPI, Transition Projects, into Bud Clark, and we freed up a building next to the bus station. That building is currently where we're providing winter shelter services for women. That also is the new home for SCT. And
our residential program, yes, our 12 beds of residential. Yes,
12
absolutely.
Beds of residential across the street from the new Blanchet House.
Yeah, that's great.
Good. Any other questions for the team here?
Not a question, but just an observation. Austin, I think you and I have talked about the fact that a lot of the people you serve are people who don't have any form of health insurance, and we can hope that most of them will be eligible for Medicaid in 2014. And Commissioner Fritz and I were talking a little earlier about the need for the city as a whole to sort of sit down with the CCO and talk about people we interact with who will become their clients next year and what can they do for them. So I think that we should have some conversations about that over the next several months about your folks.
Yes, your staff person contacted me about that, and I contacted our service providers in VOA, who does provide our treatment services. And they are absolutely looking at that in terms of getting reimbursed for Medicaid-eligible clients in 2014, which should then alleviate the general fund pressure on that part of our contract. It won't provide the housing resources that we provide through the Central City contract, but it certainly could help pick up our treatment services.
That's
absolutely. Thank you.
Questions, comments? If not, roll call, please. Anyone else here to testify? Roll call, please.
Fritz?
Thank you, Austin Raglione, for your leadership of this program over many years. I think it's fair to say it wouldn't be what it is without your guidance and leadership and your passion for the work. So I'm looking forward to working with Commissioner Novick and talking some more with you about how do we continue to truly provide a service coordination team. But this, again, is a program that has started by Commissioner Leonard with a certain set of expectations and has grown and blossomed into something that truly saves taxpayers money as well as literally saving lives. Aye.
Thank you.
Fish.
Thanks for your good work. Aye.
Saltzman.
Thank you for your good work. Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
We have a good model here. Thanks for your work in creating it. I look forward to learning more about and catching up to the good work that has been done on this front. It's complex stuff, lots of partners, difficult social problems, but a success in terms of how we're doing the work. So thanks. Hi.
Thank you, and I'd like to thank the City Council for being willing to fund a cutting-edge program like this for our highest-risk drug offenders. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, item 92, please.
Authorize the Chief of Police to execute intergovernmental agreements and amendments for Portland Police Data System and the successor Regional Justice Information Network in support of law enforcement information sharing.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm George Burke. I'm Captain, Portland Police Bureau, assigned to the Records Division, and part of my duties right now are to be the Portland Police Bureau representative on Region, which is the Regional Justice Information Network, which is replacing our current PPDS, which is the Portland Police Data System. Currently under ordinance, the number that I have here is 180554. The chief has the authority to enter into intergovernmental agreements with the partner agencies that participate in PPDS. As we transition into Region, that number of agencies is going to grow significantly. I think we're currently around 22 agencies that participate. With Region, we will expand to what I believe is going to be 39 partner agencies encompassing five different counties and two states. It's a very large project. The intergovernmental agreements that we'll be entering into, there is one master agreement that will oversee all of the agencies, and then individual partner agency agreements to the tune of 39 individual agreements. In order to be efficient and to save a lot of time for council, this would extend the chief's ability to amend and work into Region, amend those IGAs without having to come before City Council for approval.
Thank you to you and your staff for answering my staff's questions. I just have a couple that I'm still not quite clear on. It sounds like that the ordinance would extend to amendments that are related to software upgrades. Is that correct?
As I understand it, the upgrades we have into the new system of Region, the current system with PPDS, as far as I know, there are no software upgrades that are intended under that. We are just simply transitioning from where we currently are to the new system.
So would this still be the oversight from the Technology Oversight Committee if there are any choices to be made in this types of systems?
I believe that is correct. I know as we start looking at IT issues, it is still going before the committee. Jeff Baer is here with me from PSSRP and might be able to address that a little bit more accurately.
Okay, he's going to come up in a second. In the meantime, my understanding is that the user fees pay for the intergovernmental pay for the use.
That's correct.
Cover the entire cost.
That's correct.
And how much is that?
What we're looking at with the new system, we don't know yet. That's part of, we're in the middle of contract negotiations with the vendor, which is VersaTerm. There's a formula that has been put into place for the sustainment plan. And the partner agencies, in essence, what it works out to is the partner agencies will pay based on the number of officers within that agency, and that's broken out between all 38 or 39.
So the cost is the fees are designed to recover the cost, no more, no less?
That's correct.
And incidentally, I'm glad that you independently chose to go with VersaTerm, which, of course, is the 911 computer that we chose and which is, I think, will enable the two systems to talk together better. So, Mr. Baer, what's the answer regarding the software and the involvement of the Technology Oversight Committee?
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. For the record, my name is Jeff Baer. I'm the office manager for the Public Safety Systems Revitalization Program. And to answer your question, the Technology Oversight Committee does not have oversight over this particular project. Because it's under the PSSRP umbrella, we have an executive steering committee that is comprised of the PBEM, Portland Bureau of Emergency Management director, chief of police, fire chief, and two citizen committee members as well. So we've got a separate committee overseeing this particular project.
You don't have a citizen advisory committee as such for your project?
We do. Well, there's two citizen members on our executive steering committee.
Okay. So what's the input as far as the actual sharing, and maybe this is a question back to Portland Police as far as sharing the information? Because sometimes Portland Police have a different policy regarding, for instance, immigration status. How do you decide what information gets shared with the other 39 jurisdictions?
Well, the way that I understand it is that the value in this system is sharing of information. And so it is, the best I can understand, is an open system that will allow for all of the participant agencies to share the information that they put into the system. There are different, and the vendor would probably explain this better than I do, but there are different ways that you can privatize certain information that only certain people who have certain authority can view that information. There are two different ways of doing it. One is, it really refers to our confidential information. So you can make it private, or you can make it private and invisible, which means that private means that somebody knows something exists. If it's private and invisible, nobody knows it exists.
Thank you. And my final question is regarding the new system. Can officers enter text into a report that then is searchable, and you could find particular words in that report?
The beauty in this system is it is completely integrated, and the VersaTerm refers to MRE, which is the mobile
report entry
is too many acronyms here. MRE allows for officers, it will replace our current electronic field report writing system, the EFR, and that will give officers the ability to directly to do the work in their cars, to do it out in the field, and it'll also allow for information to be removed from the, or not removed but transferred from the CAD system and auto-populate into the report writing system, which should be an efficiency and time savings for officers.
And is that because we both have VersaTerm systems that's going to work better?
It does. The technology piece is a little complicated with the other agencies, but it will work. Interfaces will be created to allow that to work with the other participant agencies as well.
Thank you. So I'm just going to flag for the council and for the police bureau that I think there is probably some interplay with the Department of Justice report and the advisory committees for that process, that one of the things that we want to do with our information sharing system is to help identify folks who have had mental health challenges and who therefore might need a different approach.
Correct.
That then becomes even more important with that confidentiality freezing to make sure that the right people are getting that information. So I think that's a discussion that we'll want to have some more intense citizen input in, but I'm comfortable, thanks to your staff, getting back to mind that this particular ordinance makes sense.
Thank you.
Other questions, concerns? Anyone else here to testify on this item?
Veronica would like to testify.
Thank you very much.
Hi. Sorry, I'm froggy too.
It's okay.
I'm still Veronica, but I'm a little froggy. Always nice to see you, officers. It's always good to see you. The men in blue certainly do save the day.
The middle one. Okay, good. That's where I'm so used to speaking. Good. Okay, good morning, Mayor Charles Hales. This is my first response to you, for myself, but not for you yourself. I'm very pleased to see you up there. I do remember seeing you on the board when former Mayor Vera Katz was here. Vera and I go back a long way. She's always supported the men in blue, and she's a nice, very nice Jewish lady, I think. Irregardless of that, I like Jewish people. Me and the Middleman Jewish Center, we were always together. I didn't ever swim in the pool, though. Okay, I got to get this out of my eyes. Okay, good. That was comic relief. You always have to take time out for comic relief. Okay, be that as it may, I'm real familiar with the 9/11 system. I've been a nurse for over 30 years. Medical intensive care is the name of my forte. I have a degree from Portland State University in public health and community health education. My specific area of interest in my later years of nursing from 1982 to 1984 was at a place called Trinity or Phoenix Center. We got a lot of 9/11 calls routed through our center, and they came in court ordered. What I was going to tell you is this. I am familiar with dispatch, but I have never worked at dispatch. As a nurse, we have received dispatch. Data systems are really important. What I am concerned with right here is the human overlay. The Friends of Bill and Bob, as this relates to the system, the 9/11 data system and the computers entailed within it, deserve about 1 or 2 minutes here, and I'll just go one half of a minute over. The point of the matter is, if someone has gotten into a program of recovery in the past and they have a relapse or a slip, can we amend this agreement to include that in the point of contact with them as this relates to computer systems? So you have to just drop back and put in a little rider and say, if they were a friend of Bob, is it possible that that person could have widened the gap a little bit and narrow the focus and bring